This podcast episode includes explicit language and descriptions of violence. Please take care while listening.
It's the last day of the trial of the three officers charged with the murder and manslaughter of Manuel Ellis. The courtroom is packed with dozens of people sitting quietly, listening to Special Prosecutor Patty Eakes give her closing remarks.
And while the state disagrees with a lot of the facts, as the defense claims that they are, I'm not going to stand up here and spend 2 hours rebutting all of those different facts. As you know from the instructions, you are the people who need to decide what the facts are.
After hundreds of hours of testimony and dozens of witnesses, Eakes gets the last word in the trial. She had an hour or so between breaks to figure out how to make her final appeal to the jury. And when she starts talking, she isn't so focused on the granular details of when officers arrived or which way Manny was walking. More than anything, she says the case comes down to what the officers didn't do.
Mr. Ellis didn't need to die that day. If only he had been granted the dignity of being human and being responded to.
All of the defense teams object to that line, the phrase, dignity of being human. They argue the state has just implied the officers are bigots, even though they punched, choked, shocked, and hogtied Manny, despite his pleas that he couldn't breathe. They say claiming the officers didn't give Manny the dignity of being human has racial connotations, and that's prejudicial against them. Let me just take a second to explain the logic here. So, there's a long history in this country of prosecutors comparing defendants, especially black people, to animals when they're trying to get juries to convict. That type of language played on the prejudices and fears of the jury. It's not allowed anymore because it's obviously racist. In this case, the officers' lawyers are trying to use the same case law, but in the reverse. The implication is that if the prosecution is saying Manny was treated like an animal, they must also be saying the people who treated him that way are racist. That biases the jury against the officers, and that's not fair. It's so unfair that the judge should throw out the whole case. The judge, Brian Chushkoff, picks it up from here.
When you suggest that they treat him like an animal, like something less than human, it invokes all the stereotypes of Nazi Germany. And what does that do in terms of stirring people's emotions except to suggest that there's some kind of white supremacist, bigoted kind of activity going on here, which you claim is not the state's position and which you claim the state has no evidence of. And yet it gets introduced into this case, and it is a very serious problem.
It's kind of a wonky legal argument that the same rules put in place to protect black defendants from racist remarks in criminal court would also protect these officers from the language that they themselves used to describe Manny. Unintelligible, grunting, making animalistic noises. But the judge looks like he's considering it.
If this was being done in the other direction, that somebody was claiming that Mr. Ellis was somehow no better than an animal, well, that would be absolutely outrageous. And we'd sanction him in a New York second. Now, the jury's entitled to do what they want to do about this. But if this was being done, if the same kind of attitude, the same kind of approach was being done, and this was an African-American defendant, I would dismiss this case for prosecutorial misconduct.
Dismissing the case would erase years of work, hundreds of thousands of dollars wasted, months of time spent conducting the trial, years of preparation, all of it lost right at the end.
I don't want to dismiss this case. Because this community needs to hear from a jury, not from a judge about this. They really do. The Ellis family needs to hear from a jury about this, not from me.
Judge Chushkoff says he'll think about the officer's motion to dismiss. In the meantime, he lets the case go to the jury. The potential for the judge to throw out the charges hangs over the jury's deliberations. But the motion never comes up again. And about a week later, the jury comes to a verdict.
We, the jury, find the defendant Christopher Shane Burbank not guilty of the crime of murder in the second degree as charged. We, the jury, find the defendant Matthew J. Collins not guilty of the crime of murder in the second degree as charged. We, the jury, find the defendant Timothy Eugene Rankine not guilty of the crime of manslaughter in the first degree. guilty of the crime of manslaughter in the first degree. Not guilty of the lesser included crime. Not guilty. Not guilty. Not guilty.
This is just a profound moment for the city's history, and it's not a fleeting moment either. I think we're in the middle of something big.
Has Manny's death changed you or how you approach the office of mayor at all?
Absolutely.
I don't think it's going to be over. I think this is just the beginning.
No justice!
No peace!
I'm KNKX reporter Jared Brown.
I'm KNKX Special Projects reporter Mayowa Aina.
From KNKX Public Radio and the Seattle Times, this is the final episode of The Walk Home, the safest city in America.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'm going to read the verdict form.
I'm sitting inside the courtroom as the verdict on each charge is read out. All of the officers and their lawyers are sitting completely still, their heads down. Some of them with their heads in their hands. There's no immediate reaction as each not guilty verdict comes down. But then, when the judge finishes reading and thanks the jury for their service, the energy in the courtroom shifts.
If there's nothing else, we are recessed.
The officers shake hands with their attorneys, they hug, they wipe their faces. Their supporters whoop and holler. Someone blurts out, "Merry Christmas." Casey Arbenz, a lawyer for Officer Matthew Collins, speaks with reporters in the courthouse lobby.
I mean, it's just a huge, huge sigh of relief. I mean, the way that they've been portrayed and some of the things that have been said by people in government, obviously in the newspapers and such. It's just such a sigh of relief to know that the 12 people who actually heard the evidence said that they are not guilty, and they're not guilty of anything. So
it felt like a gut punch.
Gemini Knoll was inside the courtroom as the verdict was read. She's known around Tacoma in activist circles, mainly as an organizer around climate issues. As she was waiting to hear the verdict, she was hopeful that the officers would be convicted and face consequences for Manny's death.
The first not guilty and like the tension in the room like elevating, and then the next not guilty and like hearing people like audibly start crying, and like the next one, and now it's like almost the entire room is like audibly sobbing, right? And myself included for sure. Being in a room with like that much tightly held grief, like you can't even let it out, right? Because you have to like be on your courtroom behaviors or whatever. It's like so much grief that people are holding so tightly and it's like still spilling out. It's just, I don't know, horrifying, heartbreaking, yeah.
On the other side of the courtroom, Manny's sister, Monet Carter Mixon, leans on a friend's shoulder. She crumples more and more as each not guilty verdict is read. She, and much of the courtroom, leaves in tears before the judge can finish thanking the jury. While the officers leave the courtroom as free men, heading home with their families to celebrate the holidays, my colleague Mayowa walks with Monet, her family, and her friends to the Justice for Manny mural several blocks away.
Just like 3.5 years earlier, Monet finds a bullhorn to bring attention to her brother's death. The handful of people that are there follow her lead, and she moves off the sidewalk and into the street.
Fuck you! Fuck your street! I'm holding up fucking traffic because those bitch-ass motherfucking pieces of shit should fucking be out of your goddamn houses! The fucking police killed my fucking brother!
Murdered him.
Murdered him in cold fucking blood!
She picks up some leftover construction materials that are lying on the side of the road and begins to block off an intersection. A local light rail train is stopped. It eventually reverses down the track.
It fucking blows!
It's just one intersection, 11th and Martin Luther King Jr. Way. Traffic easily reroutes to the next block. But for the next few hours, in the cold, people start to share their frustrations.
Everybody keeps asking our reaction to a not guilty verdict. Do you see us crying?
They're guilty.
We know that they're guilty.
Sorry, it's just like really upsetting. And like it's like frustrating to talk about because I just don't really understand how the jurors got to that decision. You know, to get a not guilty on that was like a slap in the face almost.
This is a time in Tacoma, a sad time, a time where justice has vanished, where justice has disappeared. And despite video evidence, despite being seen by the nation, by the world, yet and still, police once again, get off! No consequence!
We are sick of this. We're sick of it. And if you're sick of seeing us, then do better. Because the only reason we're standing in this street is because people aren't doing better by the people who are standing in the street, who are living in these streets, who have nothing going for them and everything being taken from them by people who have more than enough.
That's right.
And we're fucking sick of it.
He was hog tied like a hog!
Right.
And still, he said, I can't breathe, sir.
Breathe, sir.
And what did the officers say?
Shut the fuck up.
Now the reality in Tacoma, Washington, and I want all black people to hear this, is you are not safe.
Never have been.
You are not safe if a man walking home from a 7-Eleven doing nothing illegal to anybody else can say, I can't breathe, sir, and still be beaten to death by officers. You are not safe.
While people gather in this intersection, reactions from all over the state start pouring in. From the governor and the state attorney general to lawmakers, advocates, the police union, and Tacoma's mayor, Victoria Woodards.
I want to thank all of you for joining us today. This is a significant moment of deep consequence for everyone in our community.
In a press conference, the mayor speaks at a dais from Prepared Notes. Behind her are a few city council members, Tacoma Police Chief Avery Moore, and City Manager Elizabeth Pauley. First, Mayor Woodards addresses the Ellis family.
My heart breaks for you, and I want to take this moment to acknowledge the immeasurable pain and loss that his death has caused.
She thanks the jury and then launches into her reaction as a black woman and the face of leadership in Tacoma.
Specifically, I want to acknowledge the anger, the distrust, the doubt, the fear, the hurt, and the exhaustion that we as black people have experienced as a result of the history of policing in this country. The verdict today does not lessen our commitment to ensure that the city's power is used to protect and serve. Under the leadership of our police chief, Avery Moore, the police department will continue its work to repair and transform. I want to express how grateful I am for the dedicated officers at the Tacoma Police Department who show up every single day in the spirit of excellence and service to this community. Today, three officers' trials concluded, but the entire Tacoma Police Department was not on trial.
So some of you guys have candles and flowers. We're gonna get behind Monet. Maybe Miss Mercia wants to get out the car. We're gonna go put our candles and our flowers at the mural.
On this night, Tacoma doesn't burn. There's no mayhem, there are no riots or broken windows, no arrests. There's no noticeable police presence at all. There's no response in other cities. It's just the 100 or so people here at this blocked intersection.
Remember that day,
March 3rd, unarmed black man, Manny Ellis, was beaten and lynched by Tacoma Police Department. We aren't safe, our kids aren't safe until we see some justice. This fight is not over.
I would invite everybody to put their candles up here, and I'm also going to invite anybody else who has been affected by...
As the sun goes down and the temperature drops, people huddle together, placing yellow candles at the Justice for Manny mural. Monet and her friends hold each other for a moment before they and everyone else goes home.
Say his name! Manny! Manny!
The officers were found not guilty, but that's not the only decision we were waiting for. We still needed to know what the Tacoma Police Department would say, whether the officers would be disciplined, fired, or welcomed back. That decision lies with Police Chief Avery Moore. In a lot of ways, Moore inherited a department in turmoil, in a city in turmoil, at a time when policing was under a microscope. He's the second black police chief in the department's history, and he was hired by the city in January 2022 as a part of its mission to transform the department. He's an outsider from the Dallas Police Department, where he was an assistant chief for investigations. Moore saw a lot to do in Tacoma, and he started making changes right away. Since he came to TPD 2 years ago, the department has hired more than 80 officers, and retention rates are back to normal compared to pandemic levels. But the department says it still needs 30 more officers. Moore also created a plan aimed at reducing violent crime by using targeted hotspot policing in neighborhoods the department designates as high crime. Neighborhoods like the area near where Manny was living in March 2020. But Moore said his approach to hotspots wouldn't involve the stop-and-frisk tactics that became notorious for racial discrimination in the 90s and 2000s. Moore's version involves officers sitting in their patrol cars for 15 minutes with the lights on.
I want us to be the safest city in the country. That's my hope. But I recognize we can only do that together.
Last year, before the officer's trial, Moore talked with KANKX about running this department in this city, which he thinks can be the safest in America.
Our officers are working hard to do the best job they can do. There's a lot of harm that's been done both sides. And we just got to be willing to acknowledge that. You know, police have felt abandoned, have felt devalued. They hear the criticism, and it does have an impact. Vice versa. The community doesn't have a lot of trust for officers. They feel like they've been harmed by officers. You know, I understand that policing, not just in Tacoma, has caused harm on communities, because that's just the truth when you look at it from a historical perspective.
Everything that happened with Manny happened before Moore arrived. But the last police chief and the interim chief punted the decision about whether to fire the officers to him. His decision is based on everything we know from the trial, the eyewitness videos, the medical evidence, those first interviews the officers gave a few days after Manny died, plus information from the department's internal investigation.
Okay, we're on the air. This is Internal Affairs Sergeant Rosenquist. This is the Internal Affairs interview of Officer Christopher Burbank.
Internal Affairs detectives interviewed each of the 15 officers who were there the night Manny died. This was during July and August of 2021, a few months after Burbank, Collins, and Rankin were charged with murder and manslaughter by the Attorney General's office. For Internal Affairs interviews, the officers are compelled to answer questions, or else they can be fired. But these interviews can't be used against them in a criminal case. It would violate their Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination. And because of the criminal charges, the statements remained out of the public eye. Until now.
Shane, are you aware this interview is being recorded?
Yes.
Is this interview being recorded with your permission?
Yes.
Did you?
In his interview, Christopher Burbank was asked to categorize the contact he and his partner, Matthew Collins, had with Manny at 96 and Ainsworth on Tacoma's South End. Burbank says the interaction escalated from moment to moment after they said Manny moved from the driver's side of their police vehicle to Burbank's passenger window.
And you indicated at that point you thought it was more of a community caretaking contact. Did that change once, the threat was made and he punched the window?
Yes. Then he was attempting to assault me at that point and needed to be detained.
So are you at the reasonable suspicion or are you probable cause at this point?
At that point, I have probable cause that he is attacked. He's made the verbal threat to assault me, and he's actively attempting to assault me at that point.
So, based on our department's use of force policy, where would you put Ellis at right now in the continuum?
He was at assaultive behavior at that point.
Okay.
Assaultive behavior. In the police department's use of force policy at the time, they used something called the force continuum. The behavior by the person police are contacting can fall into different categories: compliant, passive or active resistance, assaultive, and life-threatening. Let's call them levels 1 through 5. And with the force continuum, police officers have a set of ways they can respond based on each category. For example, Tacoma officers could start using their tasers at the active resistance level, or level 3. That'd be like if a person is trying to run away or flee. Assaultive behavior is a level 4 out of 5. It allows the officers to use almost everything in their tool belt, from batons, punches, and kicks, to sicking a police dog on them. This is the level Officer Burbank says Manny was at when they decided to arrest him. Here's Burbank's partner, Matthew Collins, talking about the neck hold he used to make Manny pass out, or tried to use, depending on who you ask. It's called a lateral vascular neck restraint, or an LVNR.
Did you ever receive LVNR training while employed with Tacoma PD?
I didn't, because we were actually in the middle of, we were asked by the department to develop the policy for it, and we were in the middle of developing it to actually put it out. So it was never official.
Okay.
In 2020, this specific tactic was nowhere in the department's training or policy. But basically, in this kind of restraint, you squeeze your arm around the blood vessels in someone's neck to cut off oxygen to their brain. But if it's not done properly, it can turn into a choke across the windpipe. That risk, and in part the story of Manny's case, is why the move is banned in Washington now. Collins wasn't trained on how to do an LVNR at the academy, or when he became a control tactics instructor for the department. He learned it through martial arts and the military. He says he used it effectively thousands of times, and no one ever got hurt. Typically, a union rep sits with each officer during their interviews. During Collins' interview, the police union president, Henry Betts, highlights the department policy that allows Collins to use that outside expertise.
And is there a section of the policy that you're familiar with that discusses the use of other tactics not listed specifically by name in that policy?
Yes.
When is it okay to use those other tactics, or what are some of the requirements for that?
When the subject's assaultive and when it's reasonable and necessary.
An officer who put a spit hood on Manny, Armando Farinas, said Manny was already hogtied when he showed up. A hockey puck-sized pool of blood had dripped from his mouth onto the pavement. In his report from that night, Farinas wrote he used the spit hood because of Manny's assaultive behavior.
So can you describe what you described as Ellis's assaultive behavior?
Trying to escape the restraints, wiggling around violently, spitting, making crazy noises, not obeying commands.
In these interviews, the officers describe Manny as a danger to their safety, and they say they follow department protocol at each stage of their interaction. But Officer Farina says when the fire department paramedics arrive, they see something different.
I specifically remember one of the younger firefighters. I don't know how old he is exactly. He just looks like a younger white male with blonde hair. The first thing he said to us when we walked up is, "What the fuck did you do to him?" And that was his exact words. And then I remember him telling us to literally get him the fuck out of these handcuffs. What the fuck are you guys doing? And then there was an argument between, not an argument, just a disagreement on, I don't know who it was between, but I remember somebody saying from afar, they were like, "Hey, we got these cuffs on him. We got him under control now. We don't want to let him back out and have him, you know,
and fired, insisted that we take the handcuffs off.
Each officer who responded to the scene was asked whether they saw anything wrong that night. All of them said no, except Collins.
Did you observe anything during the incident that indicated anybody violated any policies at all?
Not besides my swearing, sir.
After Collins, Burbank, and Rankin were acquitted, it took about 3 more weeks to learn whether they would be disciplined. We hoped the chief would give a presentation and that reporters would be able to ask questions. But Chief Moore's big decision came in an email just after noon on a Tuesday. It reads, quote, Tacoma police officers Christopher Burbank, Matthew Collins, and Timothy Rankin have voluntarily agreed to separate their positions with the Tacoma Police Department. Meanwhile, except for a sustained finding regarding Officer Collins' violation of the Tacoma Police Department policy on courtesy, the officers were cleared based on 2020 policies. That was it. That was the decision. In the statement, the chief says the use of force policy at the time, quote, failed to serve the best interests of the police department or the community. And he apologized to Tacoma's residents and communities of color, both personally and on behalf of the department, for law enforcement's historical acts of oppression, abuse, and dehumanization. Chief Moore declined our request for an interview, but the message comes through loud and clear. The chief's hands are tied by past practices protected by a union contract. By those 2020 standards, the officers who killed Manny did nothing wrong on paper or in the eyes of the department. The only thing department top brass flagged from a policy perspective was Collins swearing. He admitted it was probably him recorded on doorbell camera telling Manny, shut the fuck up, man, right after Manny says what many heard as, can't breathe, sir. Chief Moore gave Collins a written reprimand. Even though the officers voluntarily resigned, for now, they're still certified. They could go on to be police officers somewhere else. The state agency that makes that decision is looking into it and could revoke their credentials in Washington. But that process can take years. The other two officers investigated for Manny's death, Masai Ford and Armando Farinas, department records show they've had involved roles at the department in the last few years. Ford became the department's LGBTQ+ coordinator and a member of the youth outreach team. He also recruits new officers and mentors high school volunteers. Farinas became a control tactics instructor, one of the department's hands-on force experts, like Collins had been. Both Farinas and Ford have worked as field training officers with new recruits. The chief tries to reassure the community in his statement about Collins, Burbank, and Rankin, saying that new policies are in place now, and many more are under review. But what's not in his email? Something we found reading the officers' separation agreements that the city posted on its website. Is that the former Tacoma police officers, on top of almost 4 years' worth of salary, are getting a payout as a part of their resignations. $500,000 each.
This is the time set aside for public comment. Speakers are asked to identify the specific legislation they wish to address.
Chief Moore announced his decision about Burbank, Collins, and Rankin on the same day the Tacoma City Council holds its weekly meeting. The police union's new contract is up for a vote, and so is a letter from the city supporting a statewide ban on hog tying, the type of restraint used on Manny. Tacoma residents called in and showed up to talk about it all.
I'm speaking tonight to the city council in reference to the letter about hog tying. I'm against the practice. I'm glad I, as a military and corrections officer, I never did have to employ that procedure.
I do think that oversight needs to be built into any kind of contract you're going to have like that, if there's going to be one at all.
How much more accountability for police officers do we gain in this new CBA?
The police getting $500,000 after killing a man. I really hope that that was a gross error, because what I'm seeing is that you're paying hitmen to kill us.
Monet Carter Mixon, Manny's sister, called in last.
I feel like it's just like it's a shame that you guys felt it was okay to pay millions of dollars to killer's cop plus almost 4 years worth of salary when there's still people who don't have access to affordable housing. There's too many houseless people that are dying, and not only dying, but have no access to mental health and substance abuse support. You guys cannot continue to let killer cops get away with beating people senselessly in the middle of the street and act like they didn't do anything wrong.
The council votes unanimously to approve the contract. City staff point out two key updates.
We used to have language that existed in the contract that required the city to delay a compelled statement or delay interviewing an officer if they had been charged with a criminal charge or if they were being investigated. That has been removed.
That means if Tacoma officers are charged with a crime in the future, the police chief can decide to launch an internal investigation immediately. That also means the chief could, with a completed investigation in hand, fire an officer before trial. But that's all up to the chief.
And finally, a brand new article which was added to the collective bargaining agreement titled Investigative Suspension Without Pay. I'll read this to you and then explain it a little bit. It requires the chief to place an employee on investigative suspension without pay when criminal charges have been filed.
In so many words, now the chief is required to suspend any officer charged with a serious crime. Felonies, domestic violence, sex offenses. The city labor negotiator says in their research, they couldn't find anything like this anywhere else in the state. She called it groundbreaking. So these changes are significant, and the city pledges to make even more. After taking care of the rest of the day's business, there's another significant moment.
Thank you very much, Councilmember Ushkin. Thank you for the report. I'd like to begin to end tonight's meeting with a statement.
Council members start making speeches about Manny and everything that's happened. Some of them in tears, some of them speaking out publicly for the first time in years. Each of the three Black city council members, all women, give a statement, starting with Mayor Woodards.
For those who have called for the firing of the officers, rest assured that the three former officers will not return to service on the streets of Tacoma.
She goes on to say that she and the council are dedicated to creating lasting change in the city. Then she passes the mic to Jamaica Scott, one of the founders of the Tacoma Action Collective and the newest elected member of the council.
It's frustrating that it's taken this loss of life for us to be sitting here talking about a policy that should have been in place decades ago. And for us to put the conversation around our community safety at the forefront, I know that it feels like that's all we've been talking about, but we haven't really talked about it.
Councilmember Kiara Daniels says she has a speech prepared, but before reading it, she puts her notes down and speaks candidly.
I think about how traumatizing it is and how much weight we carry as people of color, as Black people specifically, and there's such a conflict in wanting to change a system without being a part of it, and also not wanting to represent a system that quite literally has made it legal to kill people that look like you. It is traumatizing.
Monet gets to City Hall in person just in time for the mayor to address her directly.
We owe you and your entire family an apology for the pain that you all have suffered. And while that doesn't remove what you felt and what you've gone through, and what you'll continue to go through, I just want you to know that the apology is sincere and our commitment to the work is real.
Later in this episode, we talk with Mayor Woodards about this commitment and ask her direct questions about how Manny's death has impacted the city. But first, the mayor has to contend with how her commitment to change is impacting city leadership's relationship with the police department. While the Tacoma Police Union agreed to the new contract, some officers and union leaders are unhappy with how the city presented it. Law enforcement all over the state and the people who support them have celebrated the acquittal of the officers and railed against any new reforms. After the verdict, Pierce County Sheriff Ed Troyer posted on his Facebook account that State Attorney General Bob Ferguson was 0-for-4 against police officers. The post has hundreds of likes. He says officers across the state feel the same way he does, that the Attorney General is out to get them.
Well, officers all across the state have reacted to the verdict in the same way. It's going to be hard to find people to do this job if you think one of the highest elected officials in the state could come after you at any time. They came after me for misdemeanor, went after the Tacoma officer for felonies, and who's going to want to do this job?
In 2021, the Attorney General charged Troyer with making a false report of an emergency. He confronted his neighborhood's newspaper carrier, a black man, who was delivering papers late at night. Troyer said he thought he was a porch pirate and that he threatened to kill him. Troyer called the charges a politically motivated anti-cop hit job. He was acquitted on all counts in December 2022. And in 2023, he and the county settled a lawsuit from the newspaper carrier, giving him $500,000, plus another $300,000 for attorney fees. Troyer says he welcomes the former Tacoma officers to apply to work for him.
They were labeled as murderers when, obviously, a jury found them innocent on all charges, and that shouldn't be held against them for the rest of their life because they were acquitted, just like I was.
Later, Troyer announced on a former local TV anchor's YouTube show that he'd be retiring at the end of his term as Pierce County Sheriff next year, after 4 decades with the department.
I'll be the longest tenured person on this department, and it's time for me to go.
During the interview, he looked back at his career, but he also looked forward, and he worried that Attorney General Ferguson would bully more people than just police officers if he wins the upcoming election for governor in Washington. That sense of an unfair prosecution, of persecution, that Troyer voices is a common theme. Police union presidents and other law enforcement officials often vent about it, too.
What have you heard from your membership?
There's a lot of people who feel like this message missed the mark, right? It was about one topic, and now we're getting into this whole history of policing and apologetic stuff. But the title of it was supposed to be to clear these guys.
That's the Tacoma Police Department's union president, Detective Henry Betts, on a local conservative talk radio show. Here, Betts takes issue with the letter the police chief sent about the officers' resignations. He feels like the chief was just supposed to exonerate the officers, but instead he criticized their entire profession by referencing a history of abuse by police officers. Betts is talking the day after that emotional city council meeting.
And it's not just internally. I mean, the city council meeting last night, they spent a good portion of their meeting basically insinuating cops are the problem. How can we fire cops? What do we do to correct cops? It's really sad because you have like 300 or 400 of us here in Tacoma that work for that city council. We work for the city manager. We work for the mayor. And their whole push is, how do they get rid of us?
Yep.
As if we're the problem.
Well, it feels like the whole intent here is not to seek justice, but to just seek punishment for cops.
Yeah, absolutely.
The way the union president and other officers feel is part of a bigger conversation, or a debate rather, about the future of policing and the definition of public safety. It's being debated now, in the state capitol, in City Hall, and in communities across Tacoma and the state. Meanwhile, Manny's case is far from closed, and Monet is about to take it to a whole other level.
Hey, it's Myla.
And Jared.
And we just wanted to take a second to thank you for listening and supporting this project.
You know, Myla, I was a listener of The Walk Home over the past few years before I joined the reporting team, and I can't believe just how much work goes into all this storytelling.
Yeah, we've been spending a lot of time together, right? But yeah, it does take a lot of work and the support of our entire organization to make something like this that has such deep meaning to the community.
But we can't do it without the support of you, our listeners. As we bring this project to a close, we need your help to ensure that we get to do more investigative and in-depth reporting and storytelling, just like this.
The two most impactful ways to support our work are to share it
and to donate.
You can donate and become a sustaining member of KNKX at our website, knkx.org.
There's a big red donate button right on the homepage. You can't miss it.
And when you donate, mention The Walk Home in the comments so we know how much this project means to you.
And thanks for listening.
All right, guys, so we're here today. I'm at the United States Courthouse.
Just a few days after the officers are acquitted, while everyone is on holiday break, I get a notification on my cell phone. Monet Carter Mixon is going live on Facebook and Instagram.
Where I've been telling everyone to go and to write, to call, to email. I just got here not too long ago trying to get a hold of Will Dreher, but apparently he's not in right now.
Will Dreher is an assistant U.S. attorney and a criminal civil rights coordinator at the Department of Justice.
I need an answer and I need a response. I will be here every day with my bullhorn, demanding that my brother gets the justice that he is deserved, because what happened to Manny can easily happen again.
To be frank, I thought the verdict would be the final chapter of this story. It took so much work and effort just to get Manny's case in front of a jury. The fact that a criminal trial of police officers happened at all is extremely rare. I wasn't sure what more could be done. But for Monet, the verdict only kicked off a new wave of advocacy. She wants the Department of Justice to step in and review the state's case to see if they think the officers violated any of Manny's federal civil rights. She stands out there multiple days in a row.
We're here again, back at a United States courthouse.
Standing outside the courthouse isn't the only strategy Monet uses to keep attention on her brother's case. Monet and the Tacoma Action Collective start a letter-writing campaign demanding the DOJ investigation. And Monet starts advocating in the state legislature. I watched her testify in support of that bill that would ban the practice of hog tying statewide.
Just a few things that I wanted to speak on in behalf of hog tying. It originally comes from something that was applied to pigs and animals. It's an animalistic thing to do. And typically it's when you put young four-legged animals and calves in a hog tie so they can be branded on a branch, or oftentimes they're getting ready to be slaughtered and killed. So when you think of the term hog tying and that practice and how it's the exact same that they do to human beings, it's inhumane for animals, so it should be inhumane to humans as well.
The bill has a lot of support. State Senator John Lovick is a retired state trooper and co-sponsor of the bill. Before serving in the legislature, he was elected in Snohomish County as Washington's first Black sheriff.
It's a shameful practice, and I will tell you personally that I have had to live with the shame of watching a person get hogtied. And it's just a shame that you just have to live with, and it's hard to get over it. Sometimes we just forget that these are people that we're dealing with.
The bill's prime sponsor is Tacoma's Senator Yasmin Trudeau. She's the first Muslim and Bengali American to serve in Washington's legislature. She was appointed to fill a vacancy in 2021 and elected in 2022.
It's important to me that every community in my district feel and be safe. This means doing things differently and doing things and naming things that are deeply uncomfortable.
The bill unanimously passes the state Senate and overwhelmingly passes in the House, so it's likely to become law. It's just one of several bills inspired by Manny's death and taken up in hopes of preventing more deaths like his. Just like in 2021, when Washington's state legislature passed a dozen bills related to police reforms after Manny's death first gained attention, more changes are happening across the state in the wake of the officers' acquittals. Charlotte Mena represents parts of Tacoma. She's a community organizer who was elected to the State House of Representatives in 2022.
Something I hear from community a lot is that, you know, we can't just make one sweeping change or a series of sweeping changes in 2021 and think that our job here is done.
She says in just the 3 years since that sweeping legislative reform was passed, law enforcement agencies and their supporters have tried to roll them back, To her, it's important to stay committed to the changes that people in the community are asking for. Bills like the ban on hog tying.
You know, when we talk about building trust with community and with some communities for the first time, it has to start with honesty and accountability. And I think, you know, if you can't have your elected representatives or your own government believe you or stand with you when they see an injustice, then we're never going to get there.
One person who says she's committed to using her power and government leadership to reform policing and find ways to make people feel safe in her community is Mayor Victoria Woodards. But many Tacomans say they're still dissatisfied with what the city has done with the police department. We reached out to Mayor Woodards for an interview for this podcast back in 2022. Then she declined. But now, after the verdict, she says she's ready to talk. Mayor Victoria Woodards has been the face of the city and its biggest champion through everything that's happened in the last 4 years. People have been looking to the mayor for answers about how to feel safe in this city since Manny was killed. My colleague Jared and I sat down with her in her office in downtown Tacoma to talk about that.
You're comfortable and you're getting a good level.
Yeah.
And can you see the yeah, they're all the way up.
Well, I'm just going to shut the door.
Right before we got started, she wanted to let us know something.
My comments really will probably be focused on the future of where we're going. And so I just want to let you know that's, but it's our conversation, so you can ask, but that's where I want to focus my attention, because I really have no control over the past, but really want to focus on how we move forward as a city. So
great. And actually, that's a great place to start. So Mayor Woodards has been busy working on reforms related to police accountability. She and new city council member Jamaica Scott have advocated a lot at the state legislature.
So we testified in support of the hog tying bill. I personally testified, I can't even tell you how many times, over the last 2 years around independent investigations.
She was also excited to talk about the new contract with the police union and the 10 new community service officers the city is planning to hire.
So they're non-commissioned officers who can respond to calls that don't need a police officer, or even to go relieve a commissioned officer.
And she shared her support of the new police chief, even as he's facing criticism on multiple fronts, from the community, from business leaders, and from some of his own officers.
Chief Moore has the stamina and has the heart to do this work. He's a man of love and compassion, both for the people who live in the community and for his officers. I do believe he's the right man at the right time.
It's clear Mayor Woodards is tired of hearing people say that the city's leaders aren't doing anything to fix policing in Tacoma. She's looking at a stapled stack of papers full of notes on all the different policies as she's talking with us. She wants to lay out everything the city has done since Manny died 4 years ago. But while she's focused on the future and moving forward, we have some important questions about the past.
Okay, so I think we only have about 15 minutes left here. So I do want to I'm going to skip ahead a little bit in some of my questions.
Sure.
So I do want to go back to 2020 and just kind of revisit the timeline around how all of this unfolded and the response from the city. Could you tell me about when you first heard about what happened to Manny?
Yes. Now, I have a horrible memory. So let me put that up front. I guess it really came to light. I believe I spoke with the Ellis family. I may have spoke to the Ellis family sometime between in April or May briefly. But it really came to light, obviously, when the coroner made his ruling. And so I would say for sure that was the moment. That was the moment that I understood the gravity of what happened.
The homicide ruling was reported in the local newspaper in early June. That day, Mayor Woodards gave her first press conference about Manny's death. We asked Monet, Manny's sister, about the first time she talked with Mayor Woodards. She says it wasn't until June, right before the mayor's press conference, not earlier in the spring, as Woodards recalled.
I know there was the report in the newspaper about the homicide ruling. Had anyone told you any information about what had happened or kind of that instance? What was sort of your thinking around that, how that event unfolded?
So the process for us is a report that we get that shares with us all of the things that have happened overnight, or just some of the highlights of what's happened. That is a report that we get every day or every other day, depending on what's happening. And I am sure, although I have not seen it for myself, that it probably came out in our daily recap.
Whether that daily recap included information about an in-custody death of a Black resident, she didn't say. If it did, she didn't say whether that information registered with her.
But those you read through, you see what happened, and you don't understand the gravity, right?
We know information about Manny's death in custody was available before that. County officials were alerted to his death the morning after it happened in March. A former high-ranking county official, a Black woman named Carol Mitchell, talked to us for this podcast 2 years ago about this. When Manny's body first arrived at the medical examiner's office, Carol says she was hearing that Manny's case might be an explosive story involving police, and she wanted to give her boss, the county executive, a heads up as soon as possible. Here's Carol speaking on our podcast.
We had one of those in the hallway quick huddles where I said, hey, this is probably going to be an issue that's going to arise. You're probably going to see some media coverage about this. And it was just one of those things that, you know, they sort of checked off as, okay, that's Carol's report for the day, and moved on to the next thing. At that point, we thought it was just Tacoma, so the county didn't really have to be terribly concerned about it internally.
Even though the county and the city have a different chain of command, I wanted to pin down when Mayor Woodard's first heard about this in-custody death. Did anybody alert you at that time in March 2020 that this was something that may be a concern or something to be aware of?
No, not to my recollection at all.
2 days before that June newspaper report, an email from the Federal Department of Homeland Security warned local law enforcement, including the Tacoma Police Department, that the announcement of the details of Manny's death could be a flashpoint. This is around the same time that protests around George Floyd's death were erupting around the country, including Seattle. The mayor gave that first press conference the day the homicide ruling came out, in June. During that conference, she said, quote, "We are seeking assurances from the sheriff's office that the investigation will be conducted swiftly so appropriate action can be taken." At that point, did you receive those assurances? How did the sheriff's department respond to you?
Well, the sheriff's department wouldn't respond to me directly because of the form of government that we have. We have a city management form of government, which means, for those who are listening, that the day-to-day operations of the city are done by the city manager. We set policy, and the city manager is responsible for implementing the policy. So in this case, that call would have gone to her before it would have gone to me.
Woodard's gave a second press conference the next day, after Manny's death was already ruled a homicide. Cell phone videos of the encounter had surfaced online. In this press conference, she uses a much more forceful tone. She calls for the officers involved to be fired and prosecuted.
As I watched that video, I became even more enraged and angered and disappointed.
You had a very strong response to seeing those videos. And had you known that those videos existed, or was that news to you when they became public?
It was news to me. I had not seen or heard of them before.
What was kind of going on in the office at that time? Was there any sort of reaction in terms of this was a communication breakdown, or this was, you know, how did you respond just in terms of the processes that were happening in the office?
So with 11 minutes left in our interview, I really appreciate all of your questions and wanting to get to the background. Mm-hmm. And would love to dive into these details, but it's, I think for me and for my city, moving forward is what's important to me. So if we can, I'd really like to kind of move forward to what we're doing now. We can't change the past, and I wish that we could. But all I can be responsible for is how we move forward and how we put policies in place and how we change so that my community can heal and be the Tacoma, the city of destiny that we all want it to be.
But I do think part of that healing is sort of acknowledging some of the, you know, outstanding questions.
Absolutely.
And I believe there are people in our community who believe that you and the office was complicit in how all of this unfolded. And so I do just want to try to get to some of that understanding from your perspective. Yeah. Looking back, do you agree with those assertions that your office was complicit in this?
I don't necessarily agree with that we were complicit. Were we perfect? No. Can we do better? Absolutely. And that's what we're working towards.
This is the first time Mayor Woodards has answered detailed questions from reporters about the timeline surrounding Manny Ellis's death and the city's response. And that's as far as we got. She's publicly apologized to Monet, her family, and the community on several occasions. Monet and her family have already settled a federal lawsuit against the county for $4 million, but they still have a pending lawsuit against the city. For Mayor Woodards, it's time to move on.
I guess the last thing that I would want to ask is, has Manny's death changed you or how you approach the office of mayor at all?
Absolutely. I've not said this in public before, but if you look around my neck, I'm wearing this cross. I put this cross on the night of my press conference. I have not taken it off since. And it is my personal reminder of what the Ellis family has experienced and what this community experienced and who Manny Ellis was. So I have a daily reminder of what has happened. But it also makes me work even harder because I don't want another black man to die in police custody in Tacoma.
For me, this interview was about trying to understand what specific actions the mayor takes responsibility for and how, if at all, the processes within the mayor's office have changed to reflect that. But after talking to the mayor, it's clear that even though she's the face of the city and its highest elected official, she didn't see the whole picture of what happened. She could have asked more questions, but she wasn't the one calling all the shots. Her job is to be the city's biggest cheerleader, even when it's hard, especially when it's hard. And she takes that job very seriously. Mayor Woodard's term will be up next year, in 2025. There's a lot she wants to do before leaving office. For now, she's getting the signal to wrap it up.
I'm going to stop there. Because I could go because I get passionate about this.
It's your job to get her to
it's your job to get me out of here. Oh, gosh.
Did you tell them I'm late?
It's about 3 weeks after the verdict, in mid-January, when I see Monet again. She's standing at a dais inside a small gym at a local community center on the east side in Tacoma. I'm on the other side with a gaggle of other local reporters.
So I'm going to try and keep it short.
Standing with her are her family, her attorney, and other advocates. There's some members of the Tacoma Action Collective here. I recognize a few leaders from the Puyallup tribe and other people whose loved ones were killed by police.
The verdict wasn't fair, and to be honest, I did get my hopes up a little bit. But I know Tacoma and I know Pierce County, and nothing is ever what it seems to be down here.
They're all here to talk about the news that the U.S. Department of Justice will be reviewing the state's investigation of Manny's death. And they can look at more officers than just Collins, Burbank, and Rankin. In a statement, the office said, if that review reveals violations of federal criminal statutes, the Justice Department will take appropriate action. Those days, standing outside the U.S. courthouse for hours, in the cold, with a bullhorn during the holidays, the letter writing and the emailing,
it seems to have worked. And actually, Monet hopes the DOJ will go even further.
Myself, along with the Puyallup tribe and Jackie Salyer's family and other impacted family members, we demand for the Department of Justice to not only conduct an investigation and file indictments for the officers and the people responsible in my brother's death, but to also get down here and place a consent decree, especially on the city of Tacoma and their police department, as well as Pierce County.
A consent decree comes after the DOJ investigates an agency for a pattern of misconduct and civil rights violations, and then files a lawsuit. This happened to the Seattle Police Department in 2012, after an officer shot and killed John T. Williams, a woodcarver and member of the Dititat First Nation on Vancouver Island. Williams had crossed the street in front of a patrol car, carrying a pocket knife and a wooden board. In official terms, a consent decree is a settlement agreement between the DOJ and the local government. In more basic terms, it's kind of like putting the agency on a performance improvement plan. It means the Department of Justice found a pattern of misconduct or abuse that the agency can't be trusted to fix on its own. The Louisville Police Department was placed under a consent decree after officers shot and killed Breonna Taylor in her home. The Baltimore Police Department was too, after Freddie Gray's death. And so was the Minneapolis Police Department after George Floyd's death. Consent decrees can last for years. After more than 11 years of reforms at Seattle PD, the federal government is just now starting to lift a few parts of the decree. Monet and all of these people impacted by police violence in Pierce County are asking the federal government to bring that process here.
Because time and time again, before me and my family is Jackie's family. There's Benny Branch's family. There's Saeed Joaquin's family. Time and time again, these police departments have shown us that they'll collude together. They'll cover up evidence. They won't investigate. They will not do their jobs. They've proven that they will obstruct the law by any means necessary. They've proven that they will not only obstruct the law, but flat out lie, abuse the law, and abuse their power. These are all things that need to be stopped.
When Manny was killed 4 years ago, while walking home from a nearby convenience store with some snacks, George Floyd was still alive. Most Americans had probably only heard something in passing about COVID-19, if that. For the most part, life was business as usual. And then Manny's death brought a racial justice reckoning to Tacoma, my hometown. There was all of this grief and hurt and distrust and anger. You could feel it in the air. And for a moment, it felt like there was enough of that emotion to make some real change. But things got quiet as the officer's trial hung over the city and pandemic-era precautions were lifted and people went back to work. They went back to their lives. There were no large crowds. The citywide protests didn't materialize even after the acquittals. But somehow, in the past 4 years, all of that anger and hurt seems to have given way to something else. Lawmakers, activists, lawyers, clergy, regular Tacomans, they told us that today they feel hope.
Here in Tacoma's council chambers, the city's council marked a historic achievement in its representation for women and people of color. Tuesday night, Tacoma welcomed its newest council member, Jamaica Scott.
We have a genuine chance right now at breaking the dam of justice.
It's kind of up to us, right? It's not like we're on the whims. I mean, there are powerful institutions at play, but at the end of the day, like, if Tacoma wants to change, if we want to be better, we can be better.
We have to keep talking about this stuff, and we have to change the narrative about who the public is and what safety is.
This has been the most healing and humanizing thing I have ever done, right? Like, I can understand why all this bad crap is happening, and I am doing something to fix it, to make it better.
You know, my hope for the future is that we do have local departments that are staffed with community members that are thinking about how best to do their jobs and not what's the most that they can get away with and what's the most that they can justify under the letter of the law.
We can't just throw our hands up in the air and say, oh, well, you know, all is lost and we'll just figure it out. We have to have hope in the ability to change things and also have hope in the goodwill of the people that are next to us.
One day it could be my family or your family, and we would want someone standing up for us. We would want someone to be honest enough to say, you know what, you do matter.
So, like, when I did organize things, I did those things because that's how I felt in that moment, and I wanted to do it, so I did it. I don't need anyone to co-sign me, and people shouldn't feel like they need to be co-signed by us to be able to do things. You know, if you want to lead a protest for Manny, lead a fucking protest for Manny. It's your life. It's your community that you live in.
You can follow all of our reporting at knkx.org. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have questions or want to share some thoughts, send us an email at outreach@knkx.org. The Walk Home is a production of KNKX Public Radio and the Seattle Times. This episode was reported by me, Maya Waina, and KNKX reporter Jared Brown. KNKX reporter Scott Greenstone and Seattle Times reporter Patrick Malone also contributed reporting. This episode was written by me and Jared. It was edited by Amy Jeffries at KNKX with support from Jonathan Martin at the Seattle Times. Music comes from Marcel E.C. Augustin, Will Jordan, and Quincy Q. Henry. Our cover art is by Rotator Creative, and research help is from Miyoko Wolf. Parker Miles Blom made and manages our website. Our online managing editor is Kara Coleman, and Eric Hanberg manages our marketing. Special thanks to the entire KNKX newsroom and the organization for supporting this project. An extra special thank you to Florangela Davila for greenlighting it, Kari Plogue for having the idea and reporting it out, and Will James for helping to make it a reality. And a special thank you to the Ellis family for letting us into their lives all this time and for sharing their story.